You're listening to Marketplace Weekend, where the economy meets real life. We're going to stay with personal finance now, but move away from the Brexit for a moment. Last week, we asked you to share your stories of how you teach your kids about money and what you want them to learn. We heard from a lot of you on everything from allowances to the stock market. Courtney Cothran in Missouri is starting with the basics for her two young boys and has a very specific rule for her 8-year-old.
So the rule we came up with is that for anything that he wants that he saves for, he has to save double. He'll spend whatever he wants on his item, and then the other half has to go into his savings account.
A lot of financial processes are online right now, but I gather you take your child to the physical bank.
Yeah, and my 3-year-old also has a savings account, and when he gets money for holidays, his grandparents a lot of times will even give him a couple dollars for Valentine's Day or things for Easter. We will wait until they get enough money, and then we go through and we count it all together, and then we put it in a baggie because a lot of it is change, and then I always make sure that they go inside the bank with me. It's hard, I think, for a 3-year-old to understand where his money is going to, so I feel like if he goes to the physical bank, he hands it over. We put it in his checkbook, and I always tell them all the time, this is how much money you have in your account, so they always know what they own, but I think it makes it a lot more physical for him to actually go there, see the building, and it makes it more understandable for him.
Tell me the story of your family vacation to Hawaii. I understand your kids made some purchases then.
We just got back from Hawaii actually on Sunday. And so my son, the 8-year-old, wanted to spend money previous to vacation. And we said, you know what, instead of spending money now, why don't you save up your money for Hawaii and you can take your money there and maybe buy some things that you can't buy at home. And so he saved his money and we go to Hawaii. And what did he want to buy in Hawaii but Pokemon cards? So we said, okay, it's your money. You can make this decision. So he bought Pokemon cards. And that's the thing that's the most frustrating is, you know, I think kids also have to make mistakes. I want to say, oh my goodness, you know, you are not going to care about Pokemon cards. You are going to want a car and you're going to want to pay for gas and you're going to want to pay for car insurance when you turn 16 and you're going to wish you had never done this, but you can't make an 8-year-old understand that. So you just have to let them make their own decisions and hopefully at some point learn from those decisions and hopefully he'll start saving on his own someday without having the double rule instituted. We'll see.
Jennifer Gerard is in Ohio. She has 2 teenagers. She's an entrepreneur. We actually reached her on a day she was selling Cleveland Cavaliers-themed items at her store. She wants her kids to have her sense of ownership and motivation about money.
I think it's just the way that I approach life in general myself. You know, I've always looked for work, and I was taught to look for work early. So I'm passing that on to my kids. It's always worked well for me. You don't learn unless you actually create income for yourself and learn what to do with it.
Your boys are 13 and 18. So how does that play out? You know, how do they learn those lessons?
Really by going out to get a job. When the kids want a big ticket item, something that I don't think is a necessity, I ask them to think of how they're going to acquire that item. So both of the kids managed to get themselves computers. Not that we didn't have one in the house, we do, but they wanted something that was faster for their games or music production or something that, you know, we thought was a little more than was absolutely necessary. So babysitting, dog walking. Joshua puts together gigs. He does sound production and DJs parties to make money.
It sounds to me, with your younger son on the computer and your older son DJing, that they're sort of entrepreneurs in their own right. Is that what you intended?
Absolutely. You have to earn your own cash to really value it. So, you know, if they make their own money, when it disappears, they feel it more.
Ron Lieber writes the Your Money column for the New York Times. He's also the author of The Opposite of Spoiled, which is about kids and money. In that book, he advocates 3 jars where kids can put their money: spend, save, donate, and thinks those things are starting points for a conversation.
Well, it starts with the fact that talking about money is a really great way to teach kids about values, about the things that you stand for, because what we spend and how much we save and who we give our money to says a lot about who we are. Mm. So it all starts there.
So how do you do it?
Well, you do it on a practical basis through these 3 jars. Families call them any number of things, but you could call them the spend jar and the save jar and the give jar. And I like the fact that those jars are stand-ins for many of the values that we hold dear. Spending is about modesty and thrift, or it should be, at least in a perfect world.
A lot of ways it's not, but go ahead.
Yep. Saving is about patience and delayed gratification, and giving is about generosity. It's about gratitude, ultimately.
I want to take you through a couple of different ages, and I do want to get slightly personal, is that you have a relatively new baby.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to know, what's the first money lesson she's going to get?
I don't know that I get to decide what the first money lesson is that she's going to get, because kids pick up all sorts of things by osmosis. We don't even know when they're listening, but in fact, they're listening all of the time. And at some point, perhaps as young as the age of two, she's going to bust out with some crazy question. And that intense curiosity, which we will value and cherish until we kick her out of our apartment, whatever the answer is to that question and the discussion that rolls out from that, that's going to be the first lesson. So with our older daughter, it was, why don't we have a summer house?
And what'd you say?
Well, we were baffled, and I was, in fact, stunned into silence at that point because I had no idea where she picked this up. We couldn't afford a summer house. We weren't talking about summer houses, but we knew it was important, right? She was trying to figure out how the grown-ups in her life were making big decisions about money, and she wanted to know what we stood for and why we were spending and saving the way that we were, ultimately.
Last week, you wrote about something called the money letter. Well, what is that, and why is it significant?
Well, I had been looking at a book by a woman named Kim Palmer, and she had this template in the back for a letter that a parent ought to write to a child, perhaps at a moment of transition when that child is graduating from high school or from college or getting their first job. And I read the letter that Kim's mother had sent to her, and I thought, you know what? That's a beautiful document. It's a keepsake, and it's an opportunity that's a little bit different from the quote-unquote money talk, where it might go in one ear or out the other, to lay down some foundational first principles about money in a keepsake that a child, an adult child in particular, might actually hang on to.
So you include what, things that you screwed up with or things you did well? How do you do it?
Well, the nice thing about a letter is that it gives you an opportunity to tell some stories, which you couldn't do necessarily if you tried to put everything down on a note card or in a list. And quite often, the best stories are the ones of failure. And kids love hearing those stories. And quite often, when parents sit down to write the money letter, they tell stories of things that happened to them in their 20s or 30s before the kids were aware of them, that offer some really good lessons about what not to do.
Often when we do segments like this on our show, or I think when people have these conversations, we hear from a lot of middle-class parents. We don't often hear from working-class parents or parents who are pushing their kids to maybe have an education in life that they didn't have. And I wonder if there are lessons that you can share about maybe kind of thinking about this, if your kids might end up in a different place than you were.
If you have the choice to talk about money, that itself
that seems
is
like a
luxury. Privilege.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a privilege, right? Because if making ends meet is a day-to-day reality and the children are involved in that, up to and including, you know, starting work at the age of 10 or 12 to help keep the lights on, then they are going to be educated into the day-to-day reality. And your biggest challenge is going to be shielding them from anxiety, making sure that they feel safe, even as you may struggle more often than not. So it has to do with how you talk to them about safety nets and making them feel comfort in the fact that there are some government social service programs that serve as backstops if everything goes awry, that your house of worship, if you have one, may step in to help, that there are family members who could help if things really went off the rail. So making sure that kids know that they are probably not going to be truly destitute, even if they do overhear their mom or their dad or their moms or their dads arguing about money or struggling with money with someone on the telephone.
In writing about families and money and in reporting the books that you've done, are there kind of universal truths that you've come across that maybe surprised you?
One of the things that parents don't always think about when considering how they're going to talk with their kids about money is the end point. And one end point to consider is the fact that college all of a sudden became a six-figure expenditure per child. This is going to be one of the biggest financial decisions that you and your family ever make, and perhaps the most impactful. But there are going to be teenagers in the driver's seat for that, which is crazy. So if you're trying to talk yourself into this, to try and psych yourself up for starting the money conversations when your children are 5 or 10 or 15, you have to keep in mind that this really big number is looming in the not-so-distant future to be thinking about those ever larger numbers, because it's a really big deal.
Ron Lieber, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next week, we want all your Brexit questions. Yes, Mark Garrison laid out the basics for you, but now's the time to hit us up. Ask about your 401k, college savings, whether this will impact your business. We're going to have an expert on to answer all your questions. So go to our Facebook page, search for Marketplace Business News, and ask us whatever you want. Or you can call us. We're at 1-800-648-5114. And yes, your voice might be used on the air.